Hi everyone, my name is Chen Fu Chan and I'm from Florida. And today I'm going to talk about the quantum algorithm for speed up the for estimating partition functions. And this work I done with my boss, Pavel, and Tanya. And Tanya was visiting us. And Anura was postdoc when he was staying with us. And this work has been supported by NSF. So basically, the talk will cover the following. First of all, I will talk about what is a partition function. And then I introduce some techniques like FPROS, which stands for fully polynomial randomized approximation scheme. And then another technique called simulating annealing. And after that, and I'll give you an example of the classical algorithm and its complexity. It's based on a recent work by Vasrani and Vigoda. They were trying to approximate the permanent through the non-adaptive cooling schedule. And we follow up that very closely, and based on their technique, we derive the complexity for a classical quantum, classical algorithm for solving the partition function. And then I will present you our quantum algorithm and the speed up. And after that, and I'll give you some summary and some related articles, you can read about it. And maybe you'll be interested, maybe you can, you know, come up with a better idea of solving this problem. So first comes to first. So what's a partition function? So let's define the state space omega is the set of elements that correspond to the states in some like a physical system. And let's suppose we have some sort of energy function E such that we map the elements inside omega into some a real number, some, you know, like a 1, 2, 3 or something. And then we define the partition function z beta equal to like e to the minus beta e to x. And I don't know, like people from physics maybe more familiar with this. It's like I think guys was like p is equal to summation. I think people from physics is probably more familiar with this term, I guess. And now we just set beta equal to k over t. So what would happen like when your beta is equal to 0 and then your beta equal to infinity? So I think the case when beta is equal to 0 is very obvious, right? Can anyone tell me what is equal to? Huh? Yeah, so that's exactly, so that's like z beta equals 0. It's nothing more than counting the number of the elements inside omega. So this is a trivial case. And this is equal to what? This is equal to temperature equal to infinity, correct? Okay, now we look at beta equal to infinity. So what does that tell us? So what you can do is, okay, you cut your summation into two parts. So you have summation f in omega and the e of x is equal to 0, so it's e to the 0, okay, and plus summation s equal to omega and e of x is not 0 and e to the minus something, and this term is close to 0, right? So what does this tell us? So this is telling us that we are actually counting the number of energy is equal to 0. So I think this physics people are very quite interested in the figuring out how many states are in the system that's at low energy or something. And this is exactly the problem we're trying to solve here. So so you see, so as I said earlier, when when beta equals infinity, and we are nothing more than the counting the number of solutions. So it's supposed to be sharply hard. And in computer science, like, there are some classes like NP, Sharpie, and I think most of you know what NP is, right? Okay, and Sharpie is nothing more than counting the how many solutions are there inside, I mean, for this problem. So we know that three set is an NP complete problem, and if we try to apply this into this three set, it's nothing more than we are counting how many clauses inside three set is equal to zero. That's a violation, such that your three set will not evaluate it to one. So that's the same thing. So it's unlikely there is any efficient, you know, algorithm for this task because it's like Sharpie hard. So now I give you the incentive to see, oh, this problem is hard, and how we're gonna attack it. Okay, but before I go on, let me introduce another term called FAPROS. It's called fully polynomial randomized approximation scheme. And if you think about, I have some sort of algorithm, and it cannot give me that exactly, because if I wanted to compute exactly, that's very difficult. But somehow I'm happy with like 90% accurate, 99% accurate. I'm happy with that, and maybe the difficulty or the complexity will be reduced a lot if I just want an approximate answer. So suppose that here z beta is our exact output, I mean the exact answer we want, but this is the algorithm we have. We can generate this the output of this algorithm. We somehow bound it in this gap in between with some sort of probability, and then we say this algorithm is FAPROS. With respect to that, its running time should be polynomial in the problem size, and with respect to how accurate you want it to be. So, any questions so far? Is that clear? Okay. So, and there's another technique called simulating annealing. And as we can see here, we know that when beta is equal to zero, it's something nothing more than something very trivial, right? And now we just want to evaluate when beta is like supposed like to L, that's like, suppose someone has a cooling schedule and the BL is supposed to R infinity, and this, they only take like L steps. So we can do the telescoping product that list, and you can see, you know, you can cancel. At the end of the day, you get nothing but the Z beta L, right? So as I explained earlier, this case is trivial. So now what we need to do, we have like one L turns of the ratio out there. So what we need to do, like, if I'm getting this one quite correctly, this one also quite correctly, at the end of the day, if I, you know, telescoping them together, I'll get what I want. So now we transform our task from like brute forcefully trying to find the number of Z beta into like we try to find the alpha I, as long as each alpha I is sufficiently like close, not really giving us like a very large error. Otherwise, if you have L stages and you multiply together, and the error will amplify, and that's not what we want. So definitely we have to put some constraint on each ratio such that it's good enough. At the end of the day, Z beta is going to be good as well. So that's the steps we are taking. So I'm talking about the classically how they do it. So suppose we have as we know earlier, we know that Z beta I is much So obviously, for each x, it's just okay. And they give this kind of distribution. They call it the Boltzmann distribution. And as I mentioned, and there's an assumption that we say that the ratio itself should be bounded by have, because there are some property later we need to use when we were driving our states from current state to next state. There's some overlap, and overlap can be interpreted as this ratio, so we can apply some property. So that's why we must have a constraint here, say must be greater than half. And classically, the Chebyshev inequality says, like, if you have a random variable and you want to do this, so and here you can sort of somehow relate to our props, because our prop is bounding nothing more than 1 minus alpha expected y. So 1 plus epsilon y. So you sort of like move things around, then you get this alpha guy is nothing more than epsilon expected value dot y. So what does this tell me? So this tell me like something epsilon squared v y is there y. So that's where the turn, they say, okay, you probably need to take this many samples in order to estimate this y. And this was actually what we're saying of I here. Okay, and make it more like easier. Suppose you have a coin, you know, like the people use the Chebyshev a lot to see, you know, how do I know this coin is biased or not? And you have to toss it like as many times as you can, because like, the more you toss, more accurate you'll be, right? So this is the same scenario here. So now we define, a random variable yi, which can be defined by this. And we define that delta bi is like beta I plus 1 minus bi. And so the expected value dot ui is equal. Okay, so when you say something, the expected value of something is nothing more than expected value of y is nothing more than the summation, the probability of yi. So here's the same thing. So the value of y is nothing more than here, and probability of it happening, as we defined earlier, this is the probability it might be happening. So we know this is the expected value of yi. And so after like some calculation, I think that's trivial, and we show that this guy is exactly equal to our alpha I. So, yeah, and maybe you might be curious where that L is from, but if you're interested later, you can come talk to me and I'll explain to you. And so classically, you know, you would need to do that many sampling just for one yi, but you had to have L stages, so you have to L yi. So that's the complexity you have. Classically, that's how many samples you need to draw in order to present your z beta correctly. So is there any question? Okay. So this is, we are only talking about like how many samples I should draw. But how do I generate a sample? So if you study like Markov chain and so there is something called limiting distribution. If your Markov chain is like ergodic and irreducible, and definitely there is a unique eigenvector. At the end of the day, it's the distribution. It's like so your Markov chain is like this. At the end of the day, you have this Markov, and there are some convergence theorem that you know. The way, no matter where you start, the step it takes to converge to this final vector is 1 over delta, and delta is the gap between the biggest which is the one, and the second largest eigenvalue. So this is the gap. And so in order to generate one sample, you have to run this many Markov chains, and then you have to run take so many samples. So classically, this is the complexity that you need to have. Okay. So now we know, okay, this is the complexity for classical version, and now we'll talk about our okay. Have nothing to do with the size of the system. No, from here, but you had to, yeah. No, I don't think so. Yeah, if it's based purely on the calculation, no, it's not related to. But now I have to ask you, like, what are we calculating on? What are we trying to get? So we're trying to get this guy, erase it. It's nothing more than the zero, counting the number of the with a zero energy. So yeah, that's a good question. I don't know, but it seems like it's not really related. Yeah.
Okay, maybe if you tell us a little bit more details about what L is.
Okay, L is the cooling schedule. So I suppose you are starting from the stage that's super hot. That's why you have the idea. And then cooling schedule is like, and that each time you can cool down the temperature a little bit, and suppose that there's someone devised some clever algorithm such that you take all L stages, that such that the temperature is close to zero. And that's a good question, because you can say, then how do I know how large L is? It can be, you know, super big, or maybe this. But that's another part of design algorithms, and we just assume there's such an algorithm. We are basing on that algorithm, and we try to compare on the same ground with a classical one. Okay, so that's the assumption we have.
And the only condition is that overlap between the
yeah, greater than half. So okay, so if you and then these days, I mean, people have been reading Segedie's paper, and Segedie's paper talk about, you know, how to quantize a Markovian, and I think I don't need to explain that to you guys. If you guys are interested, later at the end of the talk, I'll give you a list of the references, and the most classical one is the one by Segedie, and he talked about, okay, how come, you know, the quantum world is better than the classical one, because I think this is the result he has, is like, remember what I show here, it's this guy here, this classically how many steps you need to summon the Markov chain, and quantumly you have the you call it quadratic sphere, the square root. So he showed that there is such a speed up, so this is something we can use. So whenever later you are designing quantum algorithm that's related to solving problem that use the Markov chain, you can always use this property devised by the Segedie. So now this is our quantum algorithm what we do is like, okay, first thing is like we prepare the sample as the classical one as well, and then we try to estimate the alpha. And it looks very trivial. I mean, it looks like very simple, but actually what's happening inside this alpha is like something looks like a phase estimation. But you have to know this here, we got the psi I instead of pi I. We have another layer of the manipulation, but it's very simple, just one step, so we don't really care like you're gonna increase the complexity. So after you preparing the sample, and then you do the phase estimation, and then you might ask me, say, hey, wait a minute, like the phase estimation, isn't that just nothing, try to estimate the phase, and what does that have to do with alpha I? So then that comes to decide how you design this G unitary, such that you can hook up this alpha I with the phase, and that's what we were doing. So earlier, we say alpha I is greater than half, and if there, and that means the alpha I and pi I plus 1 is greater than half. And there are some calculations, but if you're interested, I can tell you later, but I already used 15 minutes, so I don't want to explain more. And based on the quantum sampling paper by Pavel and the Arula, they say, okay, you can drive some state from pi I to pi plus 1 by using this many steps of summing the quantum walks. And their paper is based on modifying the Grover's fixed-point search. And there's an even better paper analyzing, because in Grover's fixed-point search, it sets like the coefficient to 3 pi. But if there's another paper by Peter Hoyer, it tells you, you know, how exactly the coefficients affect the two reflection around the support is the rotation. And Peter Hoyer's paper explains more. And if you read that paper, I really help you, you know, understand. This is just a special case of the Peter Hoyer's paper. So we can take a look at it. So now back to our 101. Okay, so now prepare. So that's what we do. Okay. And so if in order to prepare any arbitrary pi I, then we need to summon the quantum walk this many steps. So totally, since you have to prepare L dot lows, so the complexity definitely goes up to that. This is, I think it's like, you know, summation of I equal to 0 to L is equal to L squared or something. Yeah, I think it's L squared. So that's where that L squared is from. So, any questions? No. So now, I think I will skip this slide because it will make you feel a little bit confused. So earlier, remember, I have I have this circuit, I have something called the psi I, and now I have the pi I. So what we need to do is that with that psi I is nothing more than this unitary operating on the psi appended when epsilon is 0. And we define the projector as I tensor by 0, 0. And we can show that if the psi I projects onto this projector and is also equal to alpha I. So,
you're counting this unitary as one time
step? Actually, no, this is just a preparation for, remember, if we go back to the circuit previously, I'm just trying to prepare here, this guy here. And then, remember earlier I say, and I'm just trying to calculate the phase, how is that related to my alpha I, right? So I'm here telling you, okay, with this operation, somehow, if later we do a little bit of calculation, we can see alpha I will come up inside our phase estimation. So if we design this, you know, the GGI like this, and we can see So if we under the spaces, then we can show that GI is nothing more than just something you're familiar with, the Grover's relation, and but it's under spaces. And furthermore, we can show the eigenvalue of this matrix GI is nothing more than EI plus minus theta. And from the, you know, that's why earlier, why I'm trying to show you why the psi I with respect to this projector has something to do here, because if you do a little bit of calculation, you can find out your alpha I is nothing more than your cosine theta. So try to put this together. If I can estimate this guy here, okay, let me do like this, 2 pi theta. Phase estimation, I'm trying to estimate this guy. And if I can estimate this guy, I can put in here. And if I use a little bit first order approximation estimate, and then I can estimate this guy, right? The beta I, psi I.
If you're in the space, you already need to know beta I.
When you say, you mean the
if you go back to the expression for the integer,
okay,
and for the preparation stage, yes, you
okay
need to know what beta I is,
right? Yeah.
You already need to know beta I.
But beta I, isn't that our stages that goes from like a zero all the way to infinity? So that means that L stages, so I know each stage what my beta I is, right? Do I need beta I there? No. The psi I, what I'm needing psi I here, because your psi I comes from your pi I. And your pi I is nothing more than the limiting distribution. And this guy not comes from the quantum walk of p. And how does it, okay.
No, so the quantum walk of pi I, that's fine. The pi I, the psi I, you need this unitary.
Yes.
And you think that you already know beta I, but you're trying to compute beta I plus 1?
Trying to compute beta I plus 1. Yeah. I'm not quite so sure when you were saying I'm trying to compute.
So you already know the temperatures for your
yeah
schedule?
Uh-huh, yeah.
So you know beta I, and then you just from the, you prepare the space, and then you calculate alpha I from the eigen, from the phase.
Yeah. So now this is just some constraints that we, since now we can estimate the eigenphase with respect to alpha I, and here, if you read like page 256 on the Nielsen Chang's book, they do a very good analysis of the phase estimation that it tells you how many syllables you need, and that will tell you how many times you have to summon this GI. And if you believe in that, I mean, if you use that formula and you know that this is how many times you need to summon GI, and each GI, as we showed earlier, you have to obtain this psi I and your size based on your walk operator. So here is completed 1 over delta, square root of delta. So, you know, so at the end of the day, we also achieve some sort of like accuracy factor, and then the complexity equal to L squared over square root of delta epsilon. And you can see, you compare here with the classical ones. So this guy, okay, it's gone, the same thing, but this guy, okay, this guy comes from your walk operator, okay, now compare, we've got speed up from here, and now here's epsilon squared, but here we've got epsilon, then, and this benefit comes from, like, we try to hook up the G operator with the phase estimation, so you use the phase estimation, you got another speed up here. So that's actually what this algorithm is doing. So you see, we can speed up from here and here and try to hook up with the operator. So yeah, that's what I'm saying here. Yeah. Okay. And then, so there are some of the further suggestions, you know, how we're going to improve this layer. So we can maybe use a Chebyshev quantum sampling, because in Pavel's paper, I'm not sure they use a Chebyshev. I think they use Chebyshev, but maybe there is something more left down out there, so they suggest this. And then there are some, like, this kind of technique maybe can apply to some of the topics that people are working on. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, the paper by Basirami and Zagadi, they are trying to work on the permanent, and maybe because we follow layer technique closely, maybe what we are doing here can be applied to become a quantum version of their, if later we're to do like a speed up for estimating the permanence, we can use the same technique, and maybe there are some other related topic you can work on, things like this. So here are some related articles that, I will not say this is the Bible, but this is mostly read the Segedi paper, and the paper is quantum wall, and recently we wrote another paper for implementing this Segedi's wall, because here in Segedi's wall he has a quantum update rule, and people were arguing like, okay, so you just tell me there's a quantum update rule, and what if the complexity of your quantum update rule is super big and the speed up you gain later is totally screwed, so you're not gaining anything at all. But later we show that we can implement, we designed a circuit to implement the update rule, and the complexity of it is better than, I think, the Kirchhoff theorem is like, any unitary can be decomposed to two level, and we show that we can do better than that. I think that logarithm improvement and if you guys are interested, you can just look at that in archive. And so that's pretty much the talk today. Okay.